All right, so you're listening to this podcast right now, London is Blue, and guess what? We host our podcast on anchor.fm. That's right. If you're looking to host your own podcast, this is the easiest free way to get started. It's got a content creation tool, allows you to record and the podcast right from a phone. That's right. Don't even need a computer, but you can do it there too. They'll also help you distribute it, which is probably the most challenging part. You don't want to have to mess with that. They got you covered. You can get it right on a Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as any other place podcasts are found. And you know what? You can monetize it too. Make a little cash for sharing your great content with the world. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one individual place. So you know what? Head over to your app store, download the Anchor app, or head to anchor.fm to get started if you're ready to launch your podcast and make it happen.
Hi, this is Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
This is William.
I'm Mason Mount. You're listening to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, Chelsea fans, welcome back to another, that's right, another episode of the London is Blue podcast. No Brandon today, out on the slopes, doing some fun stuff in the snow. So that's right, you got Dan here. And, as always, the wonderful, gravelly Nicholas Verlaney. Nick.
That's right.
No Brandon here. That means we get to have some fun today.
Yeah, you know, we're free of all of his constricting rules. You know, we can say and speak freely to me. I'm excited about that. And I'm also, Dan, excited about today's guest, the one and only Yantonio Yansalati. Can we get some background on the new name? Come on, man.
Back by popular demand, you're going to say. Always incredibly popular demand. Yeah, it's Yantonio Yancelotti, as in Antonio Conte Ancelotti. It was basically something that I was doing in one of my FIFA series, and it's just a little bit of fun. So, you know, something's really fun when you have to explain the fun. Do you know what I mean?
I'm excited to have learned about it.
And there you go. So there you go.
I think I'm more excited because I think from the last time we had you on to now, your Twitter account got hacked. And we found out that the Kovacic thing wasn't really you. I'm going to paint my bum with a Croatian flag and run down the streets of London. But it was actually some type of Russian bot or...
No, it was some form of hacker, but the perpetrator, I think he's left, he's gone. So we're all good now. We're all good. And I feel safe. I feel safer and warm and not as cold as I would be running down with Croatian flags on my buttocks. But we've come so far from Croatian buttock celebration to where we are right now. A lot's happened in between, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you figured out two-factor authentication and you've joined the 2020s. Obviously, rough match yesterday. Kind of put it out there beforehand, just how you cope with it, because obviously football is stupid, and we're going to get into a lot of that today. Nick, how are you coping after the loss day? I was playing some video games, went out, had a lovely lunch with the wife, and that was how I got into a better place. How did you make it happen?
I went out on an all-day kind of, let's just call it alcohol exploration section. So that was what we did. And you know what? For this being a morning recording, I am not doing too bad. But there was a point last night where I was like, oh boy, this is gonna be rough tomorrow. So I'm alive, I'm well. I know that you guys were really seriously concerned, and you know, Yan especially was just texting me at all hours of the night. Yeah. Hey man, you gonna make the recording? Of course, I'm here. I'm an Iron Man.
I was like, oh meh, Nick might not make it. Meh.
Yan, how did you cope after yesterday's match? What's your secret sauce to getting back to a good place?
Well, that question at there, Dan, is quite presumptuous in assuming that I'm coping. what makes you think I'm coping? I'm not coping, dude. I made a video like immediately afterwards, and I was kind of like, I don't ever like do ranting videos, but I was on edge. I was like, I'm angry, but yeah, dude, I'm pissed. Still pissed. I'm not coping. Football's dumb. Welcome to the London is Blue podcast.
All right, well, we're going to get into a bunch today. Nick, I leave it to you. Is there an overall theme to the show today before we go into the topics and the standard match review?
Football is stupid would be today's theme. I don't know if we have a better one than that. It was gutting. to watch that yesterday. It was not only poor football. It was just the last minute undeserved winner. You're just like, okay, well, that's how that's going to go then.
Was it undeserved though? I for me, the narrative was so perfectly poised that I was like, yeah, go on, win. Do you know what I mean? I was like, you've dug in, you've put all the effort in, you can score corners, you might as well have the last one of the game, your first of the game. I don't know.
All right, well, we'll get into that. Don't break the narrative. Don't break the script here, Ian. We invite you back because you understand the structure. Yeah. But we're going to cover a couple topics today. One, how simple the recipe is to frustrate and nick points off Chelsea right now. The challenges that we had in attack and some questions around if there are any fixes in-house or maybe externally with a shortening transfer window about to conclude in a couple weeks' time here that may or internally that we maybe see. We do have a couple of Apple Podcast reviews. Always love these, Nick. 5-star reviews that we received. Since Brandon isn't here, I'm going to throw it to you to share the love on these 5-star Apple Podcast reviews.
That's awesome. So the first one we got is, apparently I'm a podcast listener now, and that's from cute dog named Luna. Apparently she was not a fan of podcasts until listening to this esteemed show. So well done. We also have M. Dempsey, CPA, and Dawson Malinowski on the 5-star reviews, asking a couple of questions that we may or may not address in this show, Dan, about signings. So I just wanted to say a huge shout out to those people. Every week we do this, it's amazing that we have new 5-star reviews. So thank you and keep it coming.
Well, we love that. We love to see it. We also saw Brian join us on Patreon, which is great. Got the link to Discord coming to you so we can continue that chat. Had a lot of positive conversation today during the Chelsea women's rout of the Arsenal women today, which definitely was a little bit of the panacea we all needed after yesterday's performance. And then,
Dan, the special thing that's coming soon. New badges, right?
New badges, yes. They've been received. They're in my domicile. They are not in any location that I can quickly grab and put in the video for YouTube. So that's a fail on my part.
Nailed it.
But let's keep moving forward. We're pushing. We're driving. Chelsea DNA series also out. It's live. The interviews are there. Huge shout out and thank you, Nick, to the club for publishing a little nice article about it. That was very wonderful.
Yeah, that was great. We're seeing some really great traffic. We've had a lot of great responses on those interviews. And yeah, we're just excited. I mean, again, it's something newer. It's a newer format that we're trying with this mini series. So if you have any feedback or if you haven't listened to it yet, please do. Let us know how you're feeling about it. Let us know what questions you would have asked, because we always like to take that into consideration.
All right. Last but not least, we sold some scarves. You know the drill. 25 US, 25 international. Contact at londonisbluepodcast.com is the PayPal account. Shoot us somebody there. We'll send out some more scarves. Just sent out a few on Friday to those who've been waiting to get theirs. Now that I am upright walking around and can talk without coughing every 5 seconds. All right. We put it off long enough. We have to do this, gentlemen. It is a match review. It was against Newcastle in the Premier League at the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, St. James's Park, January 18th, 2020. It was Newcastle 1, 90th plus 4 minutes. Hayden, goal. You can edit that in, that goal. Now we have to listen to it, play it back. All right, and then Chelsea 0. So, Nick, match lineup. Who do we have in our 11 for this match?
Oh, just your friendly neighborhood Kepa, Reece James, Andreas Christensen. Stupid Yan and his Antonio thing is in my head. Rudiger, Azpilicueta, midfield 3 of Conte, Jorginho, Mount, and Callum Hudson-Odoi, Tammy Abraham, and Quillian make up what played like a 4-3-3, and it was kind of a little bit more structured than we've seen a 4-2-3-1 in the past.
Yeah, and then we also had substitutes of Pedro, Willy Caballero, Kurt Zuma, Mateo Kovacic, who were unused, Misha Batshuayi, Emerson Palmieri, and Ross Barkley all made appearances. So yeah, and when you saw this lineup, when you saw the 11 that we were going with, and you figured, I would imagine, that Newcastle were going to set up to block, defend, and just absolutely frustrate this team. Were you filled with confidence? Were you concerned right away from the start? Where were you at after seeing the lineup?
Well, I'm inherently concerned, so that's just that's just how I, you know. But I don't know, man. Look, it looks fine. Like, do you know what I mean? Hudson-Odoi, Reece James down the right-hand flank, absolutely tearing up the previous two outings or appearances together. So that would look promising, as it did look promising at stages in this game. Obviously, excuse me, big inclusion of Kante coming back in. A superb player, but obviously a massive talking point. I'm sure we'll get into that at one point. And obviously a big exclusion in this instance was Kovacic. But I get it, man. Like I said this on Twitter, Kovacic is an elite player. He's been on one of our best this season, arguably the best if you look at the whole season. He's superb in transitions, whether that's attacking or defending. But when you're playing against a low block like Newcastle, you don't need that at all. You need people who are going to do something incisive with possession. You're rarely going to be in transition. So I get why Mount's in there. And also, Kovacic had been stinking up the gaff the last two games. So I get it. I get the whole lineup, you know. It all seems fine to me. You know, the only real thing is maybe what we would have done. I think, was it, I don't know if we did it against Burnley or in the Cup, where it was like a Jorginho, Mount and Barkley. I could have seen like... But then if Kante's coming back in the team and Lampard's constantly championing him, I get it. It makes sense to me, Dan.
Yeah, not a surprise to see someone like N'Golo Kante walk back into the lineup over a Ross Barkley who's been a little bit more, I would say, hit or miss in comparison to the Frenchman. Obvious individuals who did not make the appearances. Tomori didn't make the bench. Pulisic obviously out due to an injury. Top line stats, we had 19 shots to their 7, 4 on target to their 2, 70% of the possession to their 30, pass accuracy 85 to their 67, 14 fouls from us to their 9, 1 yellow card to their yellow card, no red cards, we're not Sun, we're not Tottenham, we're not Aubameyang, and 2 offsides to their 1, 10 corners to their 1, and an expected goals of 2.11 to their 0.97. If you just looked at the stats, Nick, we were winning everything. We won the stat battle, but we lost the war.
And this is why stats are stupid and why I hate them. Because this proves out really nothing about how the game went. I mean, we were toothless. They actually, you know, for all the low block, you know, chatter that was happening around this team, Jan, they actually did come out of their shell a little bit in the second half. Newcastle did, and
7 shots. So
yeah, I mean, it didn't. This didn't play to me like the Southampton match a couple of weeks ago. It didn't play exactly like the West Ham match before the holidays. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but especially when our creative attacking players get into spaces around the box, it's a lot of backward, it's a lot of side to side, it's a lot of I don't want to have to make the play type of moves. And I think that's probably what's most frustrating to me about this performance, because Callum Hudson-Odoi should be eager to take on 8 people and score, you know, and same with Willian. And Tammy Abraham should utilize or have a better shot utilization than he currently does. It never felt like we were going to score in a million years yesterday. And, you know, whereas I don't necessarily think that Newcastle deserved all 3 points from this match, I certainly don't think that we did either.
Well, so let's talk about that. So this is a game, it's pretty much all Chelsea as far as those stats go, with a couple cameos by Newcastle players at certain points during the matches. But we took nothing from our trip up north. It was a crushing defeat. But Steve Bruce and his side generally set it up to frustrate us to the tens. And you know, our friend Nizar Kinsella from goal had, I think, a really astute point, and you know, at least in my mind, around what teams are doing right now, which is, and here's the quote from it, defend deep, win your aerial duels, and hit Chelsea on the break. It's the simple, effective formula that has led the Blues to losing as many games under Frank Lampard after 23 matches this season, after they did after all 38 games last season under Mauricio Sarri. Jan, is that the recipe? Is it that simple? Is the blueprint so specific and so easy to follow to beat Chelsea in this moment?
Yes. Yeah, man. Like, I've seen this movie. I know how it ends. You know, like, if you're a good team and you've got some... you've got to keep up appearances and not do that, then Chelsea can beat you, man. And then if you're just a really poor unorganized slash defensive team, or you have off days, then Chelsea would beat you. But yeah, man, like, I know Nick doesn't like stats. You know, I'm a bit of a stat guy. I think the most telling thing about the sort of general feeling against stats is XG, because I'm a believer in the XG metrics, but 0.97 to 2.11, you still completely never, it didn't feel like Chelsea were going to score. It just didn't feel like that. Do you know what I mean? Even if the XG's up there. And like, and by the end, it's just, Nick obviously said they didn't deserve the points, but I feel like almost like they do, because they dug in. They didn't stop believing. They didn't stop concentrating to the end. Why not have score from your first corner? If your plan is to score from set pieces, then, you know, get one chance, last few kicks of the game, just do it then. Do you know what I mean? that might have been their plan.
But you can't, like, I think you're kind of playing both sides of the coin there, right? You know, you're talking about a lack of statistical significance for scoring what would be kind of their only goal. And then you're saying, you know, they concentrated hard enough at the end to win, and it felt like a snatch and grab to me. Like,
oh, yeah,
totally. That's all I'm saying. Like, no, it didn't feel like, oh man, they were 1-0 up so early, and we were chasing the game, and, like, you know, they were really in it. Like, we played in their half the entire game.
Yeah, of course, it is the ultimate snatch and grab, but snatch and grabs are a huge narrative in football, and this was the quintessential one. But it's a sucker punch. You know, it's what happens. You set out, you get the opponent frustrated, you know it's a young team, you know their belief will slowly be ground down, and you're an experienced, canny team, so just go down the end, you've got nothing to lose, and the Lord of Narrative will wrap its sweet arms around you, and Isaac Hayden will score a lot of finish, and Kepa will, you know, not have his best moment because he hasn't had to do anything in 94 minutes, and, you know, criticise that all you want, but it's true that if maybe he had to defend three corners throughout the 90, he'll be a little bit more sharpened for that 94th minute, like, passage of play. But, you know, like I said, I'm sure we'll go on to what Chelsea need to do, but 2.11 XG is probably about right. You know, people were going hard on Mount, rightly in many ways, but he played in Willian when he should have scored, for my money, on his left foot. But these moments, when they don't happen, when they don't go in, when you're camped outside this low block, if those chances aren't going in, it just seems like it wasn't going to happen for Chelsea.
Part of me, Dan, part of me feels like yesterday and a couple of the other bad losses that we've had are down to the team not performing kind of specific tactics and things like that. But it also just stems from a little bit of lack of leadership. In the moment, right? You're having a tough match, regardless of what the stats say. You're you know, kind of up against it, or you're fighting a tough team. You need someone to step up and control our narrative, the Chelsea narrative, right? And we didn't see that yesterday. And I think just as much as, you know, I could be frustrated at, you know, the lack of chance conversion, or, you know, the amount of final third passes that we absolutely screwed up, I can also, you know, I think equally, or maybe even more, be mad that no one stepped up to kind of take this team and refocus them at the end. And I think that's maybe where most of my frustration is.
I don't know if I fully buy into that, just because I think one of the few people who actually tried to take a couple of shots from outside the box, and they didn't fly in particularly well, or they were handled very easily by Dubravka, was Azpi. Right. And, you know, you want someone to kind of show or put an example, say, like, look, we need to try a couple things. We need to hit the ball from outside the box. We need to try to put it in interesting areas. I think the other point that we were making around this idea that, you know, the mental toughness and kind of fortitude starts to fade away a little bit in terms of just the sink that these players get into, whether it was, you know, Mount maybe trying to take on the shot versus cutting it back into Callum, Willian not being ready to receive the ball from Mount and convert that for an opportunity, the lapse in thought or maybe in awareness when Rudiger goes up for the header and Kepa tries to go for the goal, just a lot of individual errors where we weren't plugged in for a full 90, and that to me is probably where I'm more concerned. You know, I think there were elements of leadership on the pitch today. I think it's just the when you look at the fact that from last year to this year, you know, you lose a match winner in Eden Hazard, and I think it, you know, it feels weird to have to kind of go back and continue talking about that particular point, Jan. But when you lose someone who can create a goal out of nothing, which is what this team is absolutely lacking, someone who can just grab the game by the scruff of the neck and produce a moment of individual magic, the one person you might expect to do that in this team would be Tammy. And if he gets shut down, which is what the center back pairing of Newcastle absolutely made sure they did to him, you're going to have no luck at really at this moment of converting anything.
Yeah, it's a really good point. To be honest, it's for me, Tammy is not going to be that player. And to be honest, generally, it's going to be incredibly rare that it's a center forward that does that particular moment of magic. You've got two ways of looking at it, right? It's going to be like Chelsea have been with Eden Hazard. Good under different coaches, good under different systems of different styles of play, but whenever they fail, they turn to a moment of brilliance from Hazard. Now, it doesn't have to be like that. That doesn't have to be the model of success. It's only really Chelsea that had that clutch moment, you know, for these last few years. You look at City, obviously full of superb players, but they don't have like the same kind of reliance on a player that we had. Liverpool, loads of great players, but I think Hazard's better than all the players in Liverpool's starting 11, personally. You know, you could put them up against Kevin De Bruyne, but they don't require that difference maker like we did, and how it's a psychological thing in this Chelsea team that, sure, they played with a newfound confidence about Hazard because they all raised their own sort of self-esteem a bit more, you know, the inferiority complex left, but they're still used to being able to have that him step up. Like, and this game was a prime example, not just because of him being the talisman who can change things, but it's a style of play because they're in a low, deep block in their 18-yard box. Even someone like Christian Pulisic, stylistically, would have been really beneficial in that game to carry the ball laterally in the box and win the penalty. 1-2 of someone, pop off a shot. Like, Willian doesn't do that. Willian likes to run into space if there's there, but you need someone to dribble with the ball incredibly close to their feet. Pulisic can do that. It sticks to his feet. Hazard did it. And you need someone to draw the foul. This is little moments. I'm not really a huge advocate of Zaha necessarily, but that he's the player that you needed in that game, even if he's not as good as Hazard or he's not a good investment. That kind of dribbler, Nick, is what I think missed in that game, because as good as Willian is with the ball, Hudson-Odoi is a little bit more point and squirt. We needed someone to move around the 18-yard box with the ball at their feet to either draw a penalty or, you know, draw mistakes, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the other thing that I noticed yesterday, and we're thinking about this through the lens of, like, how do you maybe break down a block nine, Dan, is you need the first line of that block nine to step out occasionally so that there's room between the lines. And I think to do that, a player like Ross should have come on early, or if Ruben was healthy, he would have been an absolute weapon yesterday, because they would have had to come out and stop the ball because it was being carried forward, not by a person, but just side to side. And they didn't have to worry about it. They could basically triangle in on Tammy with a midfielder and two center backs and basically allow him no space to receive the ball. And that's something that this team has to figure out, because while it is a commitment of players forward, and I understand how tactically that makes you weaker, maybe transitioning into, you know, a counterattack defense, it doesn't make sense for a team that wants to walk the ball into the net, which was also something that was super frustrating about yesterday, Dan.
Well, there was that and the other element of what we tried to do, and it worked more successfully against Burnley than it did in this match, is we try to cross the ball. And I think what we've seen is that, you know, Reece James is exceptional at his crossing, and he gives us an absolutely different look on the right-hand side than we've had previously. In this season, or even in prior seasons, just with his ability to put the ball in the dangerous area. But when you look at the fact that we had 24 crosses yesterday, only one headed shot, that's a couple of things, right? I mean, a few were maybe a little overcast in terms of where they landed and where they needed to be. But there were a few that landed near the area of where a Tammy might be, or where Mason might be, or even a Akante might be just crazily enough in terms of players getting into the box, but you know, they loaded up, right? And there wasn't a ton of space, and you know, Abraham only wins just 17% of his duels early. Conte wins 14%. Like, that's not good enough, Jan, if we're going to try to win through crossing and getting balls into the box and getting them on the heads of our players or near the feet of our players to get around the block. It just wasn't good enough from an execution standpoint there.
No, I agree completely. And I really do back Frank Lampard to the hill. I think he's forward-thinking, young coach with the right idea, right philosophy. He's got, you know, loads of positivity in the bank, and I genuinely back his intelligence and footballing mind to be a successful coach. But I feel like, to a degree, with tactical things, I think he does, I think I said this in a video, in many ways he does what Zidane did when he had that super Galactico team, and he was like, express yourselves, I'm an ex-player who played in the midfield, look, we're going to be defensive here, and then you guys do what you do best. Be free, be expressive, and break the opposition down. But now, this is not a criticism saying Frank should have an exact plan for an opponent there, like almost a Conte style or something like that. I'm just saying it gets to the point where the players don't know what they're doing anymore. And that's not like a criticism of their coach. It's more of a sort of instinctive self-belief thing. And that's why you see this collective failure, right? You see this collective failure of suddenly stagnation. You say the crosses, that's right. For me, if they were never going to be adventurous, Newcastle. It's such an interesting talking point, but after a couple of good games, start Ross Barkley and Mason Mount together. You know, if you're so devoted to playing Kante back from injury, then maybe put him in the Jorginho role. Just try it. But for me, to have and N'Golo Kante is rusty, running and doing that shuttling role, which he can do, we know. And it, like he said, he just didn't. Frank got really defensive of him in the post-match. I don't know if you guys saw that, saying he was like amazing and all this, but I didn't think he was very good, and I don't think he suited the style, like you say, the aerial duels, the crosses. And there was just ended up, no one really knew what to do. And I think when people resort to crosses, generally, and certainly of recent Chelsea side, it's just a symptom of, okay, they've lost what they're doing now. They look around, what are we doing? Oh, okay, I'll just cross it. When you don't have Giroud, you don't have a plan to meet crosses, and then, you know, you ultimately fizzle out after that.
As the number one N'Golo Kante fan in the world, I don't necessarily think that, as I looked at the flow of the game yesterday, I don't necessarily know if that was something that, you know, he was contributing to in a negative way. I don't think it was extraordinarily positive, you know, so maybe that's a critique. But I also think when you look at playing a 4-3-3 and you don't really have what would be considered by most to be a number 10 in a role, like, maybe that's where I would have made the change yesterday, Dan, because, you know, Mason was playing a little further back, doing a lot of tracking back when we would transition to defense, and, you know, he didn't really shine either, but I don't know if that was his fault or just where he was being asked to play on the pitch, because even when he would drive the ball forward, you know, it was the wrong decision, or he would get kind of stopped and he didn't have an outlet either way. So that's, I mean, it's all worth talking about because it was just an objectively bad performance. But I'm intrigued by the midfield, like Jan is, but maybe just for a little bit of a different reason.
Well, we will get into that and a couple more things that are just gnawing away at the back of our minds after a unfortunate defeat at St. James's Park. But before we do, we'll take one quick break, and then we'll be right back with some more conversation about this Chelsea match and what we think some solutions might be with the transfer window grinding to a close in the near future. All right, so picking up where we went off, we talked about the fact that we had 19 shots, we had 4 on target, we had 0 goals for our beloved Blues. Lampard had some comments after the game about Tammy. He said, we can't always rely on Tammy. We have to have goals across our front line. If we want to bridge the gap upwards, we can't just rely on Tammy. He's been fantastic all this season. It didn't quite come off for him this evening, but that is football. I can't complain about anything from the team, really. Of course, I don't want to give headers away in our box. They're big. It happens. But apart from that, they gave everything to try to win the game. I know, Nick, that some of that is going to feel a little unfortunate after this match, because, you know, maybe they could have given just a touch more in certain scenarios or in certain moments. But you know, where do you think, or where would you have liked to have seen something different from this line? You know, I think my one thing would have been how Callum had made some of those runs in the match against Burnley, where, you know, you kind of find that space behind everybody. We just didn't seem to have those type of runs into the box this match.
Yeah, and one thing that Tammy Abraham is not, and it's not to say that he can't be, because I do believe that he possesses all of the ability to become a world-class striker after watching him this season. He is not Roberto Firmino. He's not going to drop in and be a midfielder and bring center backs out with him. You know, he wants to play right on their shoulder. He wants to get a sneaky poacher's goal, which he damn near did yesterday, off of a weird deflection. But you know, I think that's, you know, when I watched Liverpool, you know, kind of break down some of these, you know, lower league teams, it's always because Firmino is unselfish and is able to come into the midfield and play a couple 1-2s and allow some of the outside players to get in behind, like you were just mentioning with Callum. But we didn't have that kind of second ball yesterday. And to me, that is like, it maybe, you know, as we look at potential problem solvers for the season, maybe there's a complementary striker out there who would kind of play a little bit more in a false nine role and become a distributor. I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. I think exactly that's the term, isn't it? False nine. Tammy couldn't be further away from a false nine. It's a quintessential nine, isn't it? So he's like, you know, he's 6 foot, like, at seven or something, 6 foot six or something like that. And he does hold the ball up better. He can finish with like both feet in his head, and he's young and he's getting better. But I don't have any criticism of Tammy, man. He's done so well. It's almost like, even systemically, I don't think we need to do this like 9.5 false nine number 10 to play in the wingers. I feel like Tammy's doing really well, and I think he'd do even better if a bit of pressure was off him. So what's he got, 12, 13 Premier League goals or something? Something like that, right? So say there was another player. I think Pulisic and Mount might be next on the list of 5 each or something. Or Mount might have 6. You just need one of the wide forwards to be on like 8 or 9. Do you know what I mean? Someone else needs to be having a good season up there with him. And just that as well. He's like, okay, the odd midfielder here gets the odd goal every handful of games. No, I need someone I can rely on that is a bit of a killer like me on the pitch. On the pitch. You know, not someone, the striker behind me who's good at scoring. That's great. The pressure needs to be distributed. Like, I think Lampard was quoted like, do you feel sorry for Tammy? And he's like, no, of course I don't. He's wearing Chelsea's number 9. And he's like 22 years old. He's living the dream. Like, not at all. So, and there is a bit of that. So, but he needs to have someone on the pitch like, okay, right, this is not going well, but say Pulisic's been fit all season, he's got 8 or 9 goals, he's in good form. You know, Christian's coming up, he's a bit of a killer, I can rely on him. I might be more inclined to lay it off to him because the pressure's not all on me. Like, okay, I'm the dude with 13 goals here, but no one else can bloody score. He's like, right, okay, I'm going to play the percentages here. Pulisic's a killer. He's coming up, I'm just going to play him in. We've got time here. The goal comes earlier. He maybe finishes more of these chances that he's screwing up a little bit. And that's like an unfair criticism because the pressure's off him. I don't mean the weight of the shirt. I mean the literal immediate team around him. Hence this talk about strengthening, Dan.
I love you, Jan. I love what you said. I think it's a very astute point. And it's true. Like, you know, you're 100% right. In the league, Tammy on 13 goals, Mason on 5 goals, Pulisic on 5 goals. Very hard to remember the last time the two of them scored in a Premier League match. It seems like distant memories at this point in time. And then it's Willian on 4 goals. And then it's Jorginho, who scores penalties and one free goal that basically he just was allowed to run in and tap in.
What a goal.
My favorite goal this season.
It's great.
but boy, what a goal.
But yeah, I think the fact that, you know, Callum is only on 1 goal so far. Obviously, he's worked himself back into, you know, positive situation here after the damage that he kind of suffered at the, you know, last season. But someone of this grouping, whether it's Mason refining a little bit of form, whether it's Christian when he comes back, whether it's Willian getting back off the mindset that he needs to, you know, he doesn't have to be a punch card player. He can have good performances match after match. This wasn't one of them because we talked about the tracking back element. He was very far back at times, really needed to let the center backs and the left slash right back just try to do their job and maybe be available more as a conduit for the ball moving forward. Some of his lateral runs were not super great in pulling players out of position, which is a testament to Newcastle and being just kind of, you know, resolute in the way that they were approaching this game and this situation. But yeah, the next person down having five goals, and that's two players, and neither of them are scoring in this moment. And Nick, that to me is the nail on the head, is that you have to have someone who is also contributing to goals. You know, I mean, we Hazard at least had a little help from Pedro in the previous season, who was, you know, plus double digit goals.
Well, it was like Costa and Hazard, wasn't it? Sorry to interrupt that. Yeah. It was like those two, the striker and the free scorer, Costa and Hazard. Someone in Hazard. It was always one and the other.
Yeah, and the drop down effect is not great right now.
No,
Nick. Like there's no one who's a safety net if Tammy isn't.
Yeah,
scoring.
I think that's the so it's interesting, right? Because when I talk about leadership and I'm referencing this from earlier in the show, Willian to me should be a leader every match on the pitch. Right? He's been with the club for, you know, 7+ seasons. He can turn up with man of the match performances. He was our former player of the season. And yesterday, you know, I got nothing from him. I got nothing. I didn't even get a lot of willing runs, if I'm honest. Like, I think if you're Frank, you can be pleased with his effort to track back defensively, but he's not playing fucking fullback, you know? I think that's kind of where my head gets a little bit screwy, because to me, if you're going to wear the number 10 shirt and we all know that he's wanted that for some time, and you want to be a quintessential leader on the pitch, whether it's verbally or just through your actions, I don't think you have to be a rah-rah guy to lead the team. We got to see that more consistently. And the fact that Christian Pulisic, who basically didn't play the first 8 games of the season and has been out for the last 5, has one more goal than you, and you've played every minute of the season, isn't great. It's just not great. The production isn't necessarily there. And I applaud him for, again, some of his willingness to be a little bit more defensive. But I can forgive Cal for having an off game after 2 pretty good games. I haven't seen Willian show up in a big game maybe since Spurs, or in a game since Spurs. So I think that's an area that we have to kind of figure out, because if we know that we're not going to get a lot from midfield in terms of goal scoring, and that's with Mason included in that scenario, then it has to come from somewhere else, Dan. And I don't know right now where that'd be.
So with that logic, you're saying we're due for a massive performance Tuesday versus Arsenal.
You know, Marine, he's going to make me look stupid now. With a like, wonder. You know, he's just going to go out there, man of the match. And I'm just going to get people in my mentions just all day. Well, you don't like William.
Please do. Your lips to the ears of the creator, man.
Can I just say something on William? Because he's such, if you don't mind, I don't even know what to just weigh in here, but like, he's such an interesting figure in this particular team, and he's always caught me guessing, because when Nick was sort of going off there and he was saying, like, you know, the goal production's lower than Pulisic hasn't been playing, but the thing is, that's fine. Like, I don't think he needs clutch moments, and I dig it, but I feel like he sees so much ball, Willian. I think he is in Lampard's plans. Like, there is general ball progression with him, and there is obviously the defensive work. And for some reason, I'm 30, I'm younger than this guy, and I could never run half the amount of Willian. And I try and keep fit, man. This dude, for me, is a bit of an anomaly, how he keeps running minute 1 to minute 90 in his 30s. And he does press. He does start the press as well. But it's an attitude thing, and what Nick was saying, I didn't see anything from him. I saw something that I always see from William, which I hate, is he throws his arms up in the air and he stamps his feet on the ground like a petulant little kid. And when you guys are saying, oh, we need this like leader, this guy, or Nick was saying, this guy who's been at Chelsea for a long time. Yeah, you don't do that. Just don't do that. Don't, like, you know, stamp your feet and like throw like your toys out the pram. That's literally what he does. He does, his work ethic doesn't drop. But when you've got a failing, a collective psychological failing in the team, a character thing, something that Sarri used to talk about, something that Frank Lampard hasn't talked about, but it remains. It's not in his interest to say it. Frank Lampard would never dare say, I can't motivate these players, or these players are hard to motivate, because that's not his style. But there is an element of that. There's a residual what Sarri's issue was, and also the new addition of everyone's kids now. So you've got those same senior players that you might have frustrated with psychologically or in terms of character on the pitch. And what have you added to that? You've just added a bunch of youth. So that sort of almost adds to the fermentation of this sort of collective failing. Look at Liverpool. They win every single game. It's because they know how to, it's because it's in their heads that what they do. Chelsea don't have that. Chelsea know they can play good football. They can be exciting. They, you know, they haven't got an inferiority complex against any big side. Look at the North London teams, Ajax, etc. But still, they don't have this like matured mentality of just Liverpool. Like, yeah, we're going to win regardless. And we're missing that. Whether it be youth, whether it be Willian stamping his feet when the ball doesn't come his way, something's got to give, man. And yeah, that's my little rant on that, boys.
Well, as we think about that, one area we have not talked about yet, but was a prime point of conversation, and we've maybe pushed off far enough. You know, you figure that maybe Brandon, the goalkeepers union, was protecting this conversation, but it is in our script. We want to talk about the Kepa moment at the end of the match, and I think more so as a point of a larger conversation, because yeah, it's, I think, maybe unfair to criticize for one moment in time, Nick, but this kind of feels like one of the more consistent themes of an inconsistent season has been Kepa not coming maybe good in some of the big moments when we're looking for him to maybe rescue a point.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, at least my fellow pub goers yesterday were upset. Is it just doesn't seem very consistent, and you know, this generation of Chelsea fans is used to Petr Cech being steady Eddie, you know, and you know, if he let in a shit goal, you knew he was going to come back with, you know, man of the match type of performance from goal. And I think it maybe Kepa, because of the price tag on him and the expectations that come with that, he's probably felt the pressure of the price tag, but also the pressure of the goalkeepers at Chelsea that have come before him, all of which seem to be, you know, kind of superstars in their own right. You know, Jan, I'm looking at a guy yesterday who had to save a header from maybe less than 2 yards out, who everybody is now pointing and saying, that's the problem. That guy's the problem. And I think you can, you know, a rational fan could be upset with some of his performances. I personally didn't put that on him yesterday, because I think a header from 2 yards out, that's an aerial defending problem, not a goalkeeping problem.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. That's a very sensible stance from you, Nick, man. Basically, that ball should have never been headed in towards him. Rudiger did himself no justice there. And you know, us dropping points at St. James's Park was not on Kepa. It was on the team just not doing anything with the whole game. You know, the whole game. If they took a few more risks, if they coaxed the opponent out a bit more to try and make spaces in behind, even if that took the risk of letting Newcastle have more action on Kepa, who knows? Kepa might have actually warmed up throughout the match and, you know, remembered how to be a goalkeeper. I know, obviously, you say that's the mark of a good goalkeeper, having nothing to do for 90 minutes and then making a save. He's done that for us. He's even done that this season for us. But yeah, that's not on Kepa, man. It is a concern, his you know, save percentage or whatever. But I watched him last season. I watched him, you know, I watched the semi-final Europa League shootout. I've seen him make good saves. I know his ability's up there, but, you know, Spain's number one, let's not forget, because of his player profile in comparison to De Gea. But it's just inconsistency. And I think in an inconsistent side, that just gets nourished more, but I think he'll come good. But what do you reckon, Dan, in place of what would Brandon say?
Well, we tried to pull Brandon, but you know, again, he's tasting some of that sweet powder on the mountainside, and you know, just enjoying life on, I imagine, skis or a snowboard.
Tasting some of that sweet powder. He doesn't take drugs though, so
no, on the mountainside.
Oh, okay, cool. That's not that kind of point.
So I kind of think when you get a hand to it, you have to be able to keep it out. I It's just so weird that, you know, he gets his fingertips to a couple of these balls and just is not able to keep them out of the back of the net. So I think there's a little concern I have there. You know, as much as we're saying Rüdiger should have stopped it, I 100% concede that point. I think Rüdiger, you know, just missed time the jump, which would not be the first time that that's ever happened for him. I think the general set-piece defending has been very poor this season. It's basically like a community chess card where the player gets $50. It's like the, hey, pull this card, corner kick versus Chelsea. You get a free goal. Congratulations. But I wonder why he can get his hands to the ball, but just can't keep it from going into the net. And I think that's more where my concern is, maybe, Nick, is that, like, yes, Rüdiger played a part in that too, but Kepa seems to get in these moments where he has a hand on the ball and just can't, you know, whether it's the pace of the ball, whether it's maybe he's just there, you know, a little bit beforehand. I know Brandon has talked about the height difference, and that's going to be a bit of a problem, but we've also seen him stop, you know, some other goals. So I just, the inconsistency is a little frustrating there, especially considering where Kepa, I think, maybe should be at this point in his career.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, like, I don't think it's unfair to criticize him. And in fact, there have been times this year where, you know, I think all of us have kind of had a what the fuck moment, you know, with him. But again, whether it's goalkeeping, you know, whether it's coaching Yen or it's just the run of play and maybe the communication sync with the back line, it's just not happening at a regular enough rate for me. And I don't know necessarily if the blame should be on him or if it should be on the collective, and maybe that's where people are divided.
If it was a settled back line and a settled team doing well when he made these mistakes, fine. But like you say, you made some good points over there of nothing in the back line settled, the communication thing. For that all to be nurtured and to flourish properly, you need a solid back four. You need to know who your centre-back partnership is. You need to develop chemistry with them. If you're in the market for a left-back but don't have one yet, that will be in the back of everyone's head that a new guy might be coming in. You need everything settled, and then you can look at everything else. We know in terms of ability, we've seen him pull off, you know, good shit. And we know he does like to talk. We know he's passionate. He believes in himself. We've seen that, the good, the bad, and the ugly in terms of his self-belief and not leaving the goal sometimes with all that kind of stuff. But again, another good point you bring up, goalkeeping coach. It was, you know, apparently Lampard wanted Shay Given to come in and he couldn't get him. So he's not happy with the goalkeeper coach there. So maybe, who knows, the summer we switch goalkeeping coach. We're not getting rid of Kepa. Chelsea are far too protective of their investments. So I actually quite like him. So I don't want to say we're stuck with him because that sounds negative. But Chelsea are going to be with him for a while. Maybe a new goalkeeper coach comes in. He'll benefit from a settled defence. And he'll, you know, he'll save penalties. He'll save epic shots. He'll demonstrate good distribution again. Criticism can only be deemed fair when everything else around him is a little bit more normal, because then you can really assess what he's all about and how he's coping. But I don't know. I think it'll be unfair to do so now, and people need to accept that he's trying to do his best. He's Spain's number one, and he can quite perform well at Chelsea as Chelsea's number one. Just needs to sort of iron out a few kinks. Done.
All right, so other fixes that might come are in the way of transfers. We've got a little bit of time left in the transfer window. I just want to quickly poll confidence on a scale from 0 to 10, 0 being not at all, absolutely none, 10 being without question. Where do you, first Nick and then Jan, feel like you're at that we can finish in top 4 this season without signing any additional players? Again, that scale of 0 to 10, Nick.
4. I mean, my thing is not, you know, because I had a 6th at the beginning of the season, famously, and my thing is not that I am projecting a demise or anything like that, because we've mentioned this on previous shows. We've gotten lucky and could get lucky again today if Liverpool beat United, that we haven't really been made to pay for our mistakes this season. I think the law of averages tells you that's not going to hold up for an entire season. So I think that's kind of where my head is at. And, you know, it's clear that we need at least a backup striker capable of spelling Tammy, and we currently don't have that. At most, we could really use a goal-scoring midfielder, you know, to really come in and help. You know, our defense is not going to be settled in this window, and so you kind of, at least Deanne, to me, you kind of have to play with the cards you're dealt on that one. But certainly, offensively, we gotta convert more chances. That's the only way we're gonna make top four in my mind.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Four. I was maybe like a seven before this game, literally, because after the Burnley, I got teased like, oh, we've turned a corner against low blocks and we've done it at home. You know, everything's cool. Don't worry about it. Oh no, we're fucked. You know what I mean? Like, I was watching the Newcastle and I was like, no, it's still here. It's still here. It's still here. So So I just thought, damn. Like, even if he does the odd, you know, like, you can't rely on everyone else being bad. You're right. It saw us through even from the end of last season, but you know, something's got to give eventually for the other competitors. So without a signing, and Frank Lampard would echo both of our sentiments in his post-match presser and his post-match interview, he was like, we need to strengthen. Now he was like, he was all coy at first, like, oh, I don't know, maybe we might do it depending. We'll see if it's all right for us, we may do. And you know, like when Bruce Butt came out, like, you know, I know who we're signing, but I'm not going to tell you. You know, like every now and again he cool, says Bruce. Something and he like tries to act like he wants to be involved, basically. He's like, I know, can I play too? And then Frank absolutely gave him evils for that afterwards. Yeah. Like, cheers, mate, nice one. But now he's like, yep, bring Bruce up. Get Bruce a microphone.
I just wanted Bruce to roll up in the full like training outfit, like he was going to walk out on the field, just like he's part of the team. Just stroll up there. Yeah.
To the curb your enthusiasm. I come and I'll do anything.
So considering that you both have laid out a four, what's the one realistic player, because it's not going to be Sancho, it's not going to be Werner, that you would look to add right now, or you think we realistically could add?
God, I don't know. I mean, like, the one that's interesting to me, just from a playmaking standpoint, although I'm not, like, overly keen on this, so just, like, take this for a grain of salt, would be Isco. I think there is something there, and he's proven he can score goals, or at least create good enough chances for William to occasionally bang one in. So that's interesting to me. Although I look at that and the counter argument in my head, Yan says, if Isco comes in, he'll almost be nailed on to start every week because they're not going to spend money on a guy who's not going to play that much. So what does that do to Mason Mount's growth? What does it do to Cal's growth? What does it, you know, potentially do to Ruben's growth? So like, it's a tricky fucking situation that the club are in right now, because if they make it all the way to June and they're in fourth place and then they can really invest in the players that they want, that's a gilt-edged win. If they don't, it could really turn the tables back the other way.
Yeah, hugely important. Yeah, what you just said about the summer signing, like any business or the way they'll look at it, they'll be like, summer, just go to the summer. We'll make it, it will be better for Chelsea. It will be better for you, Lampard. It will be better for everyone if we can get to the summer. But you're right, there's two ways of looking at it. Isco, he'd play a conventional number 10 for my money in a 4-2-3-1. He'd bench Mount. Mount would just have to be benched, be a rotational player. Then later on they can start fighting. As he becomes more mature, he can fight for the number one spot. I've got no problem with that. I think Isco would be excellent, and it just heighten the sort of status of Chelsea a little bit. Obviously, he could play with Mateo Kovacic, people he knows, and Spanish speak, whatever. I think that would be great. But the safest option for me, from what Dan's original question is, and I don't like it, I don't like aspire to it, is Zaha. Because he's the difference maker in that game. These games against low blocks, he will dribble into the 18-yard box and he wins a penalty. Why has Milivojevic got loads of goals in the last few seasons? Because he's on penalties and because Zaha wins the penalties. We've got Jorginho. He's our cultured Milivojevic.
Give me a fucking break. Cultured Milivojevic.
Come on. All right, whatever. He's a penalty scorer. What I'm saying is, all these games that we've dropped points, if you say, oh yeah, but you could just snatch a 1-0 win with a Jorginho penalty like Palace used to do with Milivojevic, I'd be like, yes, sir, yes, please. And it would just come with Zaha keeping the ball close to his feet, winning it, dribbling it, and being the outlet. Because he is a difference maker inherently. He plays for a crap team. No offence to Crystal Palace fans out there that are listening to this podcast. What are you doing? Turn the podcast off and go and listen to some Crystal Palace related shit. But yeah, he's a clutch. He's used to being a clutch player and having the pressure on him to do everything himself. Bring that into a better team. Bring that into a team that you can combine with. Look, suddenly there's a dude here who actually wants to do the 1-2s of you. Win that penalty, make that shot. Again, I don't want us to buy Zaha. I'm like, sounds like I'm his bloody agent here, but I'm just saying, in terms of a realistic difference maker for top four,
he has three goals.
It would
dude.
Have to be him.
Like he has three goals himself. I know that he set up the equalizer yesterday because he got in a good space, and like, I take your points well, but I think if you're gonna spend a fuck ton of crazy money on someone in a window because it's a little bit desperate, which is what this would be, right? I mean, I think we could all be honest about it.
Yeah, of course.
I want a guy, Dan, with more than three goals. That would be my requisite for the signing.
Too reductionist. It's too reductionist.
Culture Jorginho over there, yeah?
All right, well, the culture Jorginho.
The culture Jorginho.
I need you to change your Twitter handle name to Culture Jorginho, please. Yeah, done.
Season at the end. Culture Jorginho season.
All right. Well, I don't think we're going to get the answers here, clearly, that where we should be going in terms of transfers. But hit us up if you have a thought on that realistic, sensible transfer at London Blue Pod on Twitter, on Instagram. Let Ancelotti know what he should be picking up in terms of a player maybe on his FIFA save to add to his side as the digital option. We did not run a Dan of the Match poll because we don't do it when we lose, but I got to be honest, Nick, if it wasn't the man who got hit by the corner flag in the family jewels after Matt Ritchie celebrated, that has to be the man of the match.
Yeah, apparently that was even mentioned like previous to the game that he does that on goal celebrations, and apparently it went horribly wrong. I mean, this dude just got a flagpole to the junk, which is horrific. And thoughts and prayers out to that guy.
That's no good.
Jesus.
Yeah. Can we just have a quick shout out for Reece James, who looked absolutely magnificent before all of us had a nervous breakdown when he went down and clutched his ankle. But I don't want to hijack your podcast script here, but he
please do.
Again, Lamps post-match interviews, like, Reece James was your most attacking threat on the pitch. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but he was like, no, it's fine to be a good thing because modern day fullbacks, and I think Lampard genuinely wants loads of the positive play to come from Reece James and a new left back. But he was superb in that game before coming off injured. So hopes and prayers to the aforementioned testicles, but hopes and prayers to Reece James as well.
I think that might be the first time we've used the word testicles on the podcast. Congratulations. New milestone.
Therapy, boys.
Almost 400 episodes in, and we finally made it to that. Anyway,
about
looking
time.
At the Premier League table as it stands, we're recording this before the United and Liverpool game, which sadly we're pulling for Liverpool because we want United to drop some points. Liverpool in first place, 61 points. Man City, 48. Leicester losing today to Burnley with the shock result, 45 points. We're at 39. United at 34. Wolves at 34. Sheffield at 33. Tottenham at 31. Crystal Palace at 30. Arsenal in 10th place on 29. Somehow we only have basically all of the main competition for that top four spot gain a point on us because the results pretty much all went our way, and nothing wrong with Leicester dropping points because that just means that puts their top four dreams in jeopardy. So,
well, I mean, yeah, it's super important, Dan, right? Because we talked about this. Our January run, we have to win games because our February run is fucking brutal. I mean, and February is the month where you can really start to separate the cream at the top, and you have to be beating Arsenal now. And so, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on Chelsea on Tuesday, coming off of short rest, to go and beat a team that is probably pissed the fuck off that they lost in the final minute a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this, it sets up for a lot of pressure, man. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just like at the digesting, like, should I say something constructive or should I just make a negative sound to what Nick just said? Oh, I don't like it.
Why? Yeah, this is what happened when Brandon goes away. This is what happened when he goes away. Well, I fucking
take the reins. Bring it down to the trenches. Make sounds and talk about testicles. Great football analysis as well.
I think to the point of pressure. This is, you know, this the next game is always the most important game for us, and you know that's going to be true until the end of the season, because this is not something that's going to be resolved in the next three matches. You know, the quest for top four, the quest for getting back into or continuing to be in the Champions League next season, which then has the trickle down effect of allowing us to sign hopefully some really talented additions and refresh this squad in the summer. And I imagine the team post Euros, post summer tour, wherever that might be, is going to be, I think, strikingly different if we are able to sign some top tier players versus if we have to look at signing less than talented additions because we don't have the luxury of Champions League football as a carrot to dangle. But that's it. We're done talking about the men's team. We're done. We're done, Ian. We're done.
I was just going to say, just to finish, one more thing. I mean, it's just really lucky that this season we're going to win the Champions League, because it's
really
just basically
like that. It's the golden parachute.
Yeah, I just want to get that one in before you wrap up.
Okay, well, the other thing we want to talk about real quick, just a key note here. Woo! Chelsea women absolutely dominating Arsenal. 4-1 win, right to England. And yes, Sam Kerr opening the Chelsea accounts. Huge, 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 huge victory. We are only 1 point
False.
Off the top position.
No, we are actually top in now. Hand. I have the live table in here, so apologies to Dan on that one. Chelsea are top of the table on 35 points. We're 2 points ahead of Man City and Arsenal, and we have a game in hand on both of them. So that is that's super important, and yeah. Chelsea women have continued to just dominate and show their class. And this was at Arsenal today, too. And I know that Chelsea had beat them in a controversial moment earlier in the season. It was a big win at the King's Meadow. So to kind of do the double over Arsenal, always fun, always enjoyable, no matter which team is playing.
Superb. Not a surprise. Well, congratulations to Chelsea women. Emma Hayes, 201 games now as Chelsea women manager. And we don't want to see anyone else in that position ever, because she is as magical. With that, it's done. We've talked about testicles. We've talked about Chelsea losing. We've talked about transfers. We've talked about how important the match is versus Arsenal. Let us know your thoughts. Hit us up. Jan Celotti, Jan Mobile. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, man. Absolute pleasure. I mean, I was going to say, it's a bit of a contrast of last time. I came on after Captain America scored the perfect hat trick. Come on this time after we concede to the only corner of the game. So I'm getting it. I'm getting all the experience in. I'm not just coming on these like Champions League win episodes. I'm also grinding out the 1-0 losses with you boys.
You're doing the business, getting dirty with us, rolling around in the mud. We appreciate it.
That's it. No worries. Pleasure.
All right. Well, Nick, any final thought? I'll give you room for one before we go.
No, I mean, we covered it all. You know, the signing period is really dumb and I hate it. And I think every rumor that I've seen is stupid. So use caution when twittering, because it's there are a lot of people out there who think they know stuff who absolutely do not know anything. So that's that.
Oh, just remember, we did build a time machine. We're going back in time to sign Aguero when we should have signed him, and we're going to bring him back
JT said he's got bad movement. Yeah. Nah, don't sign him, boys.
Got that wrong, didn't we?
Apparently what he said. And then, sorry, I know you want to bring it in, but John Terry said not to sign Kun Aguero because he's got bad movement, but he told Chelsea to sign Falcao after he went to United because he's got great movement. So JT should not work in transfer.
Oh my God. Thank you.
That's all I want to say.
All right. Well, we definitely does not have a position in our scouting department at this point in time. With that said, we are done. That's a wrap. We're going to have a quick turnaround because we play Arsenal midweek. And of course, because it is inconsistent consistency this season, we are going to smash them. We're going to take 3 points. It's going to be a victory. And we will come back to talk to you about that Wednesday. So keep it locked in for that. But until next time, Chelsea fans, you know what to do. Keep the blue flag flying high.